Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's podcast here at www.cvasps.com. Today, we are lucky and excited to have Mr. Mike Robertson from iFAST talking primarily today about his article, What is Corrective Exercise? Mike, how are you doing today, bud? Thanks for taking the time out to be here.
Jay, I'm doing great, and thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah, well, really excited here, really, really excited about this article because this is going to open a pretty good conversation, I think, since you are the rehab guy, as some may say. Let's dive right into it, man. Let's look at the definition that you use here first, and I thought that this was really awesome. When we look at what you put in here, defining corrective exercise as an approach where an assessment is used to determine specific weaknesses and or limitations of the athlete. This assessment drives the programming process where a systematic and progressive approach is used to reduce the likelihood of injury and improve performance. Let's talk about, first of all, where that came from and how you got there to kind of bring this definition to light, because it's fantastic. I love it, man.
Thank you. Well, you know, the thing that got me going about all this is if you get on the Internet, and, you know, the Internet is a blessing and a curse, as we all kind of know, there are plenty of people that are talking about corrective exercise and the benefits of it, but there's also this small little camp of people that, you know, continue to pigeonhole it or to misrepresent what I feel corrective exercise is. So if you listen to these people, they would lead you to believe that, you know, corrective exercise is maybe some foam rolling, some mobility drills or mobility exercises, some core work or glute activation. It's the entire scope of a corrective program. And in all honesty, there's nothing further from the truth. Those could be constituent parts of a corrective exercise program, but true corrective exercise is really whatever your client or your athlete needs to get better results. And when I talk to my clients or the people that I'm working with, you know, there's a spectrum there, right? And on one end of the spectrum, you've got your beat-up, injured athletes. So corrective exercise for them is getting them out of pain, improving their dysfunction so that they can train and compete at a higher level. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got your people that are relatively healthy, uninjured, and maybe their performance has slowed. Or if they're a strength athlete, they've plateaued. And in that case, corrective exercise takes on a little bit different look and feel to those people because, you know, corrective exercise is there to bring up their weaknesses or their deficiencies so they can see higher or improved levels of performance. So in my estimation, that's what true corrective exercise is. It's an assessment that gives you an idea of what weaknesses or dysfunctions your clients and athletes are suffering from so that you can write a better program so that you know better what they have to work on or address as a coach to take their performance to the next level. So that's kind of my really long-winded explanation of that definition. But, you know, it's just it's frustrating to me because I think all corrective exercise is, when you water it down, is just smart training. You know, figuring out what people aren't good at, filling in the gaps so that they can see improvements in their performance.
Yeah, and that's so dead on, man, and it's really an awesome definition because when you think about it, and reading through it and really taking a step back and looking at it, it's almost like doing a dual needs analysis when you look at an athlete or a client or whoever it may be, whether, you know, if it's general population or a Division I athlete or somebody in the NFL, there's going to be a needs analysis based on the activities that they're involved in, but what if they can't do something that would be an activity that you would deem proper for them to do to improve their sporting performance?
Sure.
You know, that's absolutely fantastic. Well, before we get into what corrective work is, we got to know where to start. So let's talk about assessments.
Yep. And at iFAST, you know, we have a little bit different model maybe than some other fitness facilities. We take great pride, obviously, in our assessment process. And when we work in a semi-private setting, you know, 2 to 4 people at a time, we have 45 minutes to an hour set aside for each new client to take them through kind of the grand master, or the Lamborghini of all assessments, right? We can take time to look at their posture and their alignment. We can take them through all the isolated manual muscle tests, flexibility tests, joint tests. And then on top of that, we can do the integrated stuff. We can watch them squat. We can watch them lunge. We can watch them do push-ups and isolated core testing. So our assessment process is incredibly detailed. And, you know, some people would even say, well, that's too much. You know, you're doing too much assessing. And, you know, the argument that I would have there is I feel like the more in-depth your assessment becomes, the greater understanding you have of the person in front of you. And as a result, the better you're going to be able to program and coach that client. So, you know, it's a very all-encompassing assessment, and I'm not saying that everybody should use that. You know, depending on the setting you're in, you know, maybe our assessment is best. If you're in a situation where you've got a lot more people coming through the door, you don't have the same amount of time. Maybe use the FMS or something along those lines. But just the simple fact that we're talking about assessment is a huge step in the right direction, because I can tell you, 5 years ago, so few people were using any sort of assessment, and now you hear that, you know, more and more, whether it's personal trainers, physical therapists, strength coaches. Just the fact that we're even talking about assessments is a huge step in the right direction for our industry.
Oh, without a doubt. And I'm lucky to be in a situation where my primary responsibility, I'm able to drop groups down where, I mean, we've got 5-6 guys at most training at the same time, so we're able to take a little bit more of a detailed look at how they do things. But you're
sure.
Right, with a bigger team, I mean, we utilize the FMS here and, you know, look at the general situation where, you know, possibly even if it's just in a warm-up where we're looking to help these kids move a little better in a simple form. But I do need to give a plug here that we have in our arsenal of references, you're assessing correct, and when it's come to the teams that we work with and that I particularly work with, the progressions and the assessments, you know, the progressions with the corrective exercises and the assessments are absolutely second to none, and I couldn't recommend it enough to everybody that's listening today, man. You guys did a hell of a job with that thing.
Thank you. And you know, one of the things that you had mentioned there, that if you don't mind me going back for just a second, a lot of people might bypass this, but as a coach, you know, you're always assessing your athletes, you know, and so often people assume, well, an assessment is just something you do every 3 months, and you know as well as I do that, you know, we're always assessing our clients. We're always getting a feel for their posture, their movement, what they do well, what they don't do well. So, you know, just the fact that you're constantly coaching and cueing and being aware of how your clients move, you're immediately going to give them a better training result. So I just wanted to say, you know, I'm glad to hear you're saying that, because it's true. You should always be assessing, always kind of getting a feel for how your clients move and what you may need to work on or address.
Yeah, and, you know, the last podcast we posted was with Yosef Johnson, and we talked quite a bit about precision. And I think that precision and assessment are, although if you looked in Webster's, they probably wouldn't be synonymous, but in this case, they really almost are, because when you look at movement, whether it be a cutting action or a jumping action or squatting or any form of lunging or pressing or whatever it may be, if the precision of the technique is not dead on, you know, if the precision isn't there, then you're doing something wrong. And like Greg Cook says, great athletes are great compensators. They're going to find a way to cheat to do it right. If we aren't precise with our programming and our coaching and our cueing, then we need to be very precise with how we assess, and vice versa.
Absolutely.
And like you said, I mean, it's a great statement that everything we do is an assessment.
Yep.
You know, whether it be if Johnny squatted 225 today and, you know, last time he squatted 205, the assessment is he's getting stronger and he's able to, you know, stabilize the weight and hold the spine in the proper alignment and sit back properly and hinge at the hips. And, you know, his hip rotators are firing properly because his knees aren't valgusing and his ankles are moving well because he's able to hit depth. You know, all of those things mixed together. It's really the broad spectrum view that you have of it, I think, is very, very good. And it's really important for performance coaches and and athletic trainers alike, you know, anybody in a rehab setting in the college level, to understand that it's way more than just tendonitis is a VMO issue. You know, it's
yeah.
way more than that. And it's really, really exciting that people are out there pushing those ideas and passing them on to people, and you know, that can open their eyes to understand the big picture of everything and how it all fits together.
Absolutely. And something you said, another thing that you just said, you know, I'm actually getting ready to write a blog post about local versus global, you know, and the fact that so often when somebody has a knee issue, you know, somebody just looks at their knee like, oh, okay, well, what's going on with your knee? Versus looking at the big picture. And that's where you need some of those gross tests. Sure, their knee issue could be a knee problem, but they could have ankle dysfunction. They could have hip dysfunction. They have core dysfunction. So, you know, again, it just comes down to the better your assessment is, the more all-encompassing it is, and the more information you're going to have to make good decisions with your programming and with your coaching.
Right. And that's awesome. Well, Mike, a lot of the people that are going to be out there listening are going to be people in the college environment working with big groups. Now, where
yeah.
can you see this fitting in? You know, I mean, a football team, you're running groups of 20 or more. A baseball team, you got 32 guys. How can you see assessment and corrective work fitting in a large group scale?
Sure. And, you know, it's definitely more challenging. When I was at Ball State, 2000 to 2002, the biggest group I had, every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m., I had 26 soccer players, females, all at the same time. So obviously, I don't have the resources to individually assess each one of them. So in that case, part of what you're going to have to do, you're going to have to make some generalizations, right? You've got to make a few assumptions. So I know if I'm working with a 20-year-old female soccer player, she's probably going to be weak through her upper back, she's going to have some core instability, and she's probably going to have weak glutes and weak hamstrings. And part of that is just being a female, and part of that is respective of the sport that she plays, right? Soccer is incredibly quad dominant, so I have to make a few assumptions. And what I do from there is I craft a program, you know, whether it's foam rolling, whether it's mobility work, strength training, energy system training, that takes those things into account. I'm going to stack the deck in my favor. So I know if they're weak in those areas, we're going to hit those the hardest when we're in the gym. We're going to hit their upper back hard. We're going to hit their core and trunk stability hard. And we're going to hit their posterior chain hard. Then from there, you kind of get a feel for, okay, these 20 girls are just getting beast mode in the gym. They're getting stronger. They look better. They're fitter. And then these five or six aren't getting the same kind of results. So with those girls, that's where we have to tweak or refine the process a little bit. Maybe it's a loading issue. They're not as strong. They're trying to keep up with the other girls, so they're not getting the same training effect. Maybe they have more major issues going on that we need to address. So we can take not only the load, but maybe we regress the exercise a little bit. Maybe for some girls that are just incredibly talented or athletic, some of those exercises or progressions aren't challenging enough. So we bump them up the ladder a little bit. So you have a basic framework or template for your programming, and then, you know, the girls that aren't having the same level of success, you got to sit down and figure out, okay, how can I tweak or, you know, manipulate the program to get a better end result for these individuals? So it's not ideal, you know, it's not a one-on-one assessment and corrective and program design, but you work with enough clients or athletes and you start to get a feel for the major issues that you're going to see. You generalize the program to extent, and then you individualize the program with the people that aren't getting the best possible results.
Yeah, and that also, to piggyback on that, another thing that we've been real successful with is looking at what they have difficulty with in the gym as well. You know,
yep.
if you deem an exercise to have a high level of dynamic correspondence, but you've got kids that can't do it or can't do it right, you know, whether it be a specific time of year or just that they have difficulty overall. I love the fact that you're talking about taking a step forward to take two steps forward, because to be honest, that's exactly what we've been doing here for the last two or three months with our guys. When practice started, you know, they couldn't squat. Depth
yeah.
went away, because their ankles start binding up. They're running on hardwood floors. They're in ankle braces and basketball shoes, a.k.a. moon boots, you know, running around. And
yep.
Now they can't flex and get depth, so we move completely away from double-legged exercises for a month and a half, went into a split squat progression to a front foot elevated to a rear foot elevated, worked the mobility to get it back, and we've got half the guys in the team that have gone through the progression and are squatting like we're in the middle of the off season. I mean, it looks beautiful
yep.
right now.
That's great.
And it's really, you know, it's something where you almost have to check your ego at the door and say, what's best for these young men or women in order to be able to play and then perform better. And it really is, it's great that you brought that up, because that was exactly what I was going to ask you about, and you beat me to the punch. So looking at it, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, you know, you're exactly right, and you have to leave your ego at the door, you have to leave your pet exercises out of it. You have to look at the individual and say, what does this person need right now to get them from A to B? And when you start doing that, it makes your life much, much simpler, and it gets the clients and the athletes better results. You know, because at the end of the day, they don't have the same biases that we do when it comes to strength training. Like, strength training for them is a vehicle to improve their performance. So as long as they get results and they see it on the court or on the field, they're good to go and they're happy.
Without a doubt. And if they're not getting better, who cares?
Right, exactly.
Because, you know, people like to say you win games in the off season, but last I looked, you know, the Broncos didn't win that game in overtime because Tebow laid down on the bench and hit 225 for 40 reps.
You know? Right, exactly.
I mean, a guy got beat on a slant, it was over. But
yeah, exactly.
So where do you see this fitting in? Now, when we take these exercises and we take the programming and we take a step back, we have a way that we use it here, and I'd like to run it by you after you're done, but where would you see corrective work fitting in into your programming overall?
Yep. Well, I think that may be the biggest issue, is that I view the entire program as corrective in nature. Like, if you're giving a client exactly what they need from a foam rolling, mobility, you know, flexibility, strength training, energy system perspective, your entire program is corrective. And that's something I'm really going to harp on when we talk here in April and when I give this talk. You know, when you look at it through a specific lens, whether you know it or not, when you assess your client, when you program and coach for their needs based off the assessment, immediately your entire program is somewhat corrective in nature. So it's kind of a shift in mindset, really. It's not just a few elements. And again, that's what the contrarians and the people that love to argue on the internet want to say. Oh, corrective is foam rolling or it's mobility. And again, those are just constituent parts of what a truly corrective program is. So corrective programming is everything that you're doing. If you're trying to get somebody out of an anteriorly tilted position, or just like your basketball players that lost their ankle mobility, you designed an entirely corrective program to restore their ankle mobility and get their squat pattern back. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
I mean, to me, your entire program is corrective. Whether you would define it that way or not, I most definitely would, because you developed a program based off their needs with a specific goal in mind, and you achieved it. So now you're on to the next thing, and that's maybe trying to improve their performance or drive their squat up. You know, you figure out what their target is, what their goal is, create a program that achieves that, and then you move on to the next thing. So, I mean, to me, your entire program is corrective.
Yeah, and, you know, it is, because you're trying to correct, if we use that term here, correct their performance, as in and
exactly.
improve, you know.
Exactly.
It would almost be corrective exercise could be used synonymously as an improvement exercise. You know,
yeah.
And I love the fact that you throw in the energy system work there too, because it is like, whether people want to believe it or not, there's a high aerobic aspect to everything you do. So if you have people that don't have any aerobic capacity, they're not going to
yep.
be able to perform any activity because they're not going to be able to recover. You know,
absolutely.
So if you start working on that, are you correcting them or are you improving them? And I think the answer to that is yes.
Yes.
You know, and if we find individual instances through our assessments, where we like to put them is in warm-up sets, where there's
mm-hmm.
things that, you know, you'll do a set, a warm-up set of exercise A for however many reps, and you'll hit a mobility exercise or a stability exercise, depending on what it is.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
Another, and work our way that way. Because if we're trying to use these to prep them to be better at what we feel is going to make them better at what they're playing, their final goal, then to me, it just makes sense to fit them in there.
Absolutely. And we do a lot of similar stuff. You know, one of our pet progressions early on is, let's say somebody comes in and they're in anterior tilt, they've got a huge lumbar lordosis in their lower back, and they have no glute function. So one of the first things we'll do, pull-throughs may not be the most sexy or exotic exercise, but we'll pair a pull-through with something in half kneeling. So maybe they do a pull-through, and we superset that with a chop or a lift. So we're driving glute function, take a little break. Then we go to an exercise that forces them to actively use their glutes, their obliques. We're trying to lengthen their hip flexors, so we're taking the brakes off. And then we go back to the pull-through, so it's a feed-forward process. We're constantly driving the movement patterns or, you know, the stability patterns that we're chasing or looking for that we know will improve their performance.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. That's fantastic. And it's very similar to what we do. You know, a lot of work with the antagonist areas to prep
yep.
the agonist to do the work. That's great stuff.
Absolutely.
Mike, I can't thank you enough. We're really excited about your next piece that we'll have out here hopefully in a few weeks. And we're even more excited to have you on campus, man. The lineup's going to be insane, and we can't wait
yeah.
to see what you got, you know, for us here.
Yeah, I love to joke around and say it's like all these very world-renowned people, and then, oh, yeah, we get to have Mike Robertson, too. So
yeah, well,
I'm looking forward to it, though. It's going to be a great weekend, and I'm very excited to be a part of it.
Awesome. Well, we can't tell you how excited we are, man. It's going to be great, and like I said, you know, it's going to be a blast here on campus. For more information, if people listening haven't been to Mike's site, do not hesitate to go check out RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. That's all one word. Guys, the products that he has on there are top-notch. They're all sitting here right at my desk. I'm looking at them all right now, and we reference these things quite a bit. And be on the lookout for more from Mike right here at www.cvasps.com. And swing on out here in April to see what Mike has to say in person. Mike, appreciate you taking the time out, man, and we will talk soon.
My pleasure, Jay. Thanks again, brother.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Chew.
Bye.